Hello and welcome to the reading of the Fort Dodge Messenger for Friday, September 11th and Saturday, September 12th, 2020. I'm your reader, Leanne Bakerose. New AFES program targets negative thought processes. A new partnership between the City of Fort Dodge, Juvenile Court Officers, and Athletics for Education and Success offers a chance for certain young first-time offenders to avoid the justice system. The program started in mid-January. Since then, 10 youths have completed it. None of them have been in trouble again, according to Charles Clayton, Executive Director of AFES. That's really the point of the program, he said. The diversion program is for low-risk youths charged with offenses such as disorderly conduct, fifth-degree theft, interference with official acts, and fifth-degree criminal mischief. Young people charged with those offenses for the first time are automatically diverted to AFES. At AFES, they are placed in a cognitive restructuring program called Truth Thought, according to Clayton. He said the program addresses criminal thinking errors or barriers in the thinking process. Clayton said many of the youths believe the thinking processes and rationales that led them to get in trouble are actually normal. Truth Thought, he said, works to replace those thoughts and rationales with more positive ones. It also provides the youths with more skills to resist peer pressure. Kids need to know there is another way to solve their problems, or they just need support, he said. AFES also helps young people in the program look for jobs. Ryan Risner, a juvenile court officer who supervises a 9-county area, said the diversion program holds youth accountable without sending them deeper into the juvenile justice system. This is helping those kids grow up to be productive citizens and not grow up to go to prison, he said. Sacrifices that came before them. Iowa Central students honor 9/11 first responders. The students in the Iowa Central Community College Fire Science Program are too young to remember the events of 9/11, when terrorist attacks claimed the lives of almost 3,000 people in New York City, Washington, D.C., and outside of Shanksville, Pennsylvania. Those students don't remember the almost deafening silence or the looks of horror as fellow Americans watched from their televisions when one hijacked plane crashed into the World Trade Center and then another. But through the stories of others and facts they learn in class or surfing the internet, they understand and respect the sacrifices of first responders on that fateful day. First responders who, in the face of danger, continued to move forward in an effort to save the lives of others. New York firefighters and police officers who climbed the stairs of the World Trade Center as others were coming down, climbing, knowing they may not come back down alive. They didn't experience it, but they can tell you the facts of the day, said Iowa Central Fire Science Coordinator Lenny Sanders of his students. They don't know the emotion, but they know the facts. On Friday morning, on the anniversary of 9/11, students paid tribute to those sacrifices by participating in physically demanding challenges. Jack Powers of Garner, Max Stokes of Clive, and Weston Johnson of Spencer, all sophomores at Iowa Central, climbed the stairs at a fire training facility on Avenue O Friday. They climbed a single flight of stairs 110 times, representing the New York fire crews, some of whom climbed as high as 110 stories of the World Trade Center. At about 8:30 a.m., Powers was nearly halfway to completing the 110 stories. He was ready for a break. "I could feel it at 20 stories," he said. At 8:59 a.m., an alarm on Sanders' phone sounded. "The South Tower just collapsed," Sanders said. Sanders, the former assistant fire chief for the Fort Dodge Fire Department, set his phone to go off at each major event from the morning of 9/11. Meanwhile, at the Iowa Central Recreation Center, about 15 fire science students were busy pushing themselves off the ground and into the air in an exercise called a burpee. They were tasked with doing 343 burpees, one for each firefighter who died responding to the attack on the World Trade Center. Andy Mittling, an instructor and Fort Dodge firefighter, added a 20-pound vest for his workout. Elijah Valley of West Palm Beach, Florida, was one of the first to finish. It took him about 30 minutes to get all the burpees in. At the moment I was feeling it, but once I got done, I felt like I could do more, he said. I could push a little harder. It's a mental thing. Valley said he spent time living in New Jersey as a child. He feels a connection to what happened on 9/11. My mom was there during 9/11, he said. I just feel really badly for all the firefighters and people in that building. Nobody deserves to have that happen. I put them in my prayers. Gus Sokol, a sophomore from West Lynn, Oregon, was on number 270. I've been working out on the rugby team, so I'm in good shape, Sokol said. But each rep, you have to honor it. 7 of Sanders' students are on the college rugby team. 2 play basketball, 3 are bowlers, 2 are sports shooters, 1 is involved in rodeo, and another runs track. Sanders said sports translate to being a firefighter. Firefighting is a team sport, so it does relate well to the program, he said. Rugby is a pretty tight program. They look out for each other. Even though I've only had them for 5 weeks, they are coming together as a cohesive team. Honestly, I have a group of beasts. Matt Newton, an instructor and Fort Dodge firefighter, said 9/11 is a chance to help students understand the courage of first responders. Now, so many people getting into it were born after it happened, Newton said. They see pictures. This is our chance to bring attention to it and familiarize them with it and the sacrifices that came before them. These guys went out and just did it. For a lot of them, it wasn't even their day to work. And while Sanders certainly honors those who perished on 9/11, he said there are people still physically suffering from the aftermath. One of the things we forget is there are thousands dying from the air quality issues, Sanders said. Respiratory illnesses and cancers from working at ground zero. It doesn't get a lot of attention, but it really should. Sometimes they aren't considered line of duty, but they absolutely are. Go Big, Go Dodgers, set for September 19th. The Fort Dodge Community School Foundation's long-awaited and highly anticipated Go Big, Go Dodgers fundraising event will be September 19th at Fort Frenzy. FDCS Foundation Director Nick Mosier is hoping this year's gathering, which has been rescheduled twice due to the coronavirus pandemic, will be worth the wait for both attendance and enjoyment. Originally planned for last April, the organization has patiently targeted the right date and put the proper protocol in place to offer both food and fun in a safe environment. Face coverings will be strongly encouraged, Mosier said. We will be sanitizing all games and stations, making sure we're keeping everything clean and allowing people to have a good time while respecting the rules and social distancing measures. Doors open at 6 p.m. Hors d'oeuvres will be served. The live auction begins at 7 p.m. with music to follow. Many tailgate games are offered, from cornhole to giant Jenga and Connect Four. Tickets are $40 per person. This is a huge event for us, mainly because we're putting 100% of the money we raise back into the district and investing in our kids and teachers, Mosier said. It's really a celebration of our schools and our community. The opportunity to get together for a worthy cause and support the future of Fort Dodge. In 2019, the Go Big, Go Dodgers event raised $80,000 through ticket sales, sponsorships, and fundraising through live auction items and donations. Nearly 400 people attended. I think the turnout and the amount of money raised in 2019 exemplifies the positive momentum in our district, FDCS Foundation President Jen Peterson said in a statement last year. Donors, sponsors, and those who attended sent a message that they support the great things happening in our schools and that they want to help give our students access to educational items that will help them go above and beyond in the classroom. The FDCS Foundation helps educators and students go above and beyond what district funding allows with grants for professional development, technology, and other educational items. Recently purchased resources have included programmable robots, math and literacy materials, metal shop tools, and musical instruments that the FDCSD may not otherwise be able to afford. In 2019, the FDCS Foundation focused on middle school career and technical education upgraded surface planners, hybrid flipped classroom at FDMS, reading books and Spanish classes at FDSH, middle school wrist heart rate monitors, virtual reality for social and emotional learning, and the STEM program. The FDCS Foundation has also helped spearhead the FDCSD's Leader in Me project, which provides a character-building framework based on Franklin Covey's The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. The foundation committed to financially support the program for the first 2 years at a cost of $55,000 per year. Go Big, Go Dodgers tickets are available in advance at the FDCS Foundation website, fdcsfoundation.org, or at the door the night of the event. Sponsorship is also available through the FDCS Foundation website. Over 3,600 students are in the Fort Dodge Community School District. The annual foundation event has raised over $380,000 to support the FDCSD since 2011. Fort Frenzy is located at 3232 First Avenue South. If you go, here's what you need to know. What? Go Big, Go Dodgers fundraiser for the Fort Dodge Community School Foundation. When? 6 p.m. September 19th. Where? Fort Frenzy, 3232 First Avenue South. Cost? $40 per person. Wallace, we need to be more diligent. Local doctor answers COVID-19 questions. As residents of Webster County continue to navigate through the COVID-19 pandemic, opinions have formed about the seriousness of the virus, the ways in which it spreads, and if protective measures like masks truly make a difference. Dr. Lincoln Wallace of Unity Point Health Trinity Regional Medical Center took some time on Friday to answer some of the messenger's questions about COVID-19. The messenger. Why has COVID-19 had such an impact on the way we live our lives? No other virus or disease in history has caused this much controversy while also shutting down our economy for a lengthy period of time. Dr. Wallace. There are a couple of things that make it unique. It's very contagious. Those that I've had that have been positive are often unaware of where they came in contact. Unlike some other new viruses like SARS in the past, we think there's a significant percentage that have minimal to no symptoms and can still spread it along. And that number is up to 40% asymptomatic of people who have COVID. People are walking around with it that don't know it and can spread it. Other illnesses, people get so sick you can identify it quickly and quarantine them before they are able to pass it along to someone else. The messenger. Masks? How well do they work? When should they be worn? Should schools mandate mask use? Dr. Wallace. There is no question in my mind that masks, if worn consistently, masks decrease how much it's passed around. Are they 100% effective? No. But do they decrease it? Yes, that is 100% a fact. They factually reduce transmission. In my opinion, yes, schools should mandate if kids are in close proximity, they should be wearing masks and should also have barriers in front of them. But I don't think one is a substitute for the other. The messenger. How are students and children being treated for COVID? Dr. Wallace. Most of them are doing fine. If they are positive, they need to stay home so they aren't passing it around. I think the school's policy is 14 days from diagnosis. In my opinion, 10 days is adequate, but 14 is fine. If they get sick enough to require hospitalization, there's treatment options that aren't available in the outpatient for those well enough to be home. The messenger. What are some different ways COVID patients have been treated? Dr. Wallace. Our current mainstays are steroid therapies in the hospital space, convalescent plasma, antibodies from someone who has taken COVID, taken from one donor to another. Those studies are ongoing but are promising. Beyond that, it's supportive respiration either with high-flow oxygen or, if necessary, intubation, which is mechanical ventilation. The messenger. How can we distinguish COVID from another illness as the season goes along? Dr. Wallace. That's a tough one because it has many crossover symptoms like the other seasonal viruses we see or the common cold. We also know from publications out there, people can have co-infections. You could be positive for the flu and COVID. If patients have symptoms consistent with COVID, in general, if you have COVID-like symptoms, fever above 100.4, nasal congestion, sore throat, cough, shortness of breath, gastrointestinal symptoms, many people are also reporting loss of taste or smell in 10 to 12% of cases. With any of those symptoms, you should contact your provider. The messenger. What tips do you have for the community as we continue this journey through the pandemic? Dr. Wallace. Hand washing remains important as frequently as you can, especially if you've been out and return home. Be careful about gathering in large groups. Makes sense as well. Large groups of people not wearing masks, that's where we've seen large outbreaks. Is it safe to go to the grocery store or visit your family? Yes, I think that's fine. Based on what I see out and about, I think we need to be more diligent about our mask wearing and our hygiene. The Messenger. How long could this go on? Dr. Wallace. We are probably not likely going to see a known, effective, and safe vaccine until May or June 2021. I think we will be dealing with this version, COVID-19, for the next year and a half to 2 years, in my opinion. We will need to learn to live with it, and we will. Cyber scare. FD schools return following attack. District. Most systems are back online. The Fort Dodge Community School District announced Thursday that class will be in session Friday following a cyber attack that disrupted the district's phone and internet services on Wednesday. The district said its systems are coming back online and most of its phones are working again. The district started experiencing an outage of the utilities and buildings early Wednesday morning when a cyber attack locked down its servers, according to Jennifer Lane, FDCSD Director of Communications and Community Relations. As a result, there was no class or online learning on Thursday. Fort Dodge Community School District understands the importance of maintaining the operational integrity and security of our systems, Lane said. Access to some schools is currently unavailable as a result of a cyber attack we recently discovered. We immediately implemented our response protocols and began an investigation. Cybersecurity experts who have worked with other organizations that have had similar issues have been engaged. We are working quickly to address the issue and to restore operations. Jeremy Pearson, the district supervisor of information technology, said the issues of the attack were noted a little after 6 a.m. Wednesday. We started working as soon as we got into the office with the security company we are working with to maintain some of our compromised systems, Pearson said Wednesday. It appears to be some ransomware attack for payment to allow us to recover our systems. We are slowly but tediously restoring systems a little bit at a time. Ransomware is a type of malware that threatens to publish the victim's data or perpetually block access to it unless a ransom is paid. The district said it has notified law enforcement of the attack and supports their investigation. As part of our response to this incident, we will also look for opportunities to enhance our existing security posture, Lane said. We appreciate the patience of our Dodger families and staff as we work through this incident. FD man charged with burglary, robbery. A Fort Dodge man answered to two charges in Webster County Magistrate Court Thursday after police say he followed a woman and assaulted her in her parked car before stealing her wallet. Rutilio J. Zavala, 22, is charged with first-degree burglary and second-degree robbery, Class B and C felonies, respectively, in connection with the Saturday incident. Criminal complaints said the victim, who was familiar with the defendant, spotted Zavala following her shortly after 10 p.m. while driving with a friend. The victim pulled into a Casey's General Store parking lot for the presence of witnesses. The victim said that Zavala got out of his car, approached her car, and reached through the partially open window to assault her by pulling her hair and hitting her face, bruising it. After that, complaints said he stole her wallet and sped away in his car. Zavala is held in Webster County Jail on a $25,000 cash-only bond. A preliminary hearing has been scheduled for September 18th. A news brief. Flu clinic postponed. The Webster County Public Health Department drive-through flu clinic scheduled for Saturday, September 12th, has been postponed. Supplies of vaccine have been delayed due to wildfires in the West. When the vaccine arrives, probably within the next couple of weeks, the department will reschedule the clinic. Lifestyle brief. Gowrie garage sales Friday and Saturday. Gowrie citywide garage sales are Friday and Saturday, September 18th and 19th in Gowrie. A lifestyle brief. Federated Garden Club to meet Tuesday. The Fort Dodge Federated Garden Club will meet at 1 p.m. Tuesday at the Lion's Den, 731 Exposition Drive. Peggy Moody will be speaking about hostas and their care. Visitors are welcome. A lifestyle brief. Noon Kiwanis Pancake Day is September 19th. Fort Dodge Noon Kiwanis Annual Pancake Day is 8 a.m. to noon September 19th at Kemna Auto, 10 South 25th Street. The event will be drive-through. Pancakes, sausage, and beverage will be served for a free will donation. Tickets sold this spring will be honored. A business brief. Fairway sets fundraising record for MDA. Fairway Stores, Inc. once again partnered with the Muscular Dystrophy Association to host the 10th annual Fairway MDA Golf Classic at Beaver Creek Golf Club in Grimes. The event raised a record-setting $167,000 for MDA. Funds raised at this event will fund research and provide healthcare services and support for more than 1,700 MDA families across the state of Iowa. We are proud to support the Muscular Dystrophy Association through this annual event that's raised over $850,000 over the last 10 years, said Reynolds W. Kramer, Fairway President and CEO. We want to thank our generous partners who continue to support us in our efforts to further MDA's life-saving mission. 45 vendor partners provided sponsorships and teams, making it a full tournament once again. For the 10th year in a row, the event was presented by Keurig Dr. Pepper. Other top sponsors included American Foods Group, Blue Bunny, Cylinder Express, Dean Snyder Construction, E.J. Gallo Winery, Greater Omaha, Kemp's, PepsiCo, Sanderson Farms, Cesarac, Tyson, Webster City Custom Meats, and Wells Fargo Advisors. The funds raised at this event are crucial to local families here in Iowa and helps fund groundbreaking research, a state-of-the-art care center at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics, and helps send kids to MDA summer camp, said MDA Development Director Brady Puel. The COVID-19 pandemic has dramatically impacted our fundraising events across the country this year. Despite the challenges, though, Fairway and their vendor partners persevered to put on a safe and successful golf outing to raise desperately needed funds, and we are incredibly appreciative. In 2020, Fairway employees, customers, and vendors raised over $415,000 for the MDA through various fundraising efforts, including the golf event. Business brief. Burns is chair of Friendship Haven Board. Tim Burns was recently elected chair of the Friendship Haven Board of Directors. Burns is currently chief investment officer with Decker Truckline, Inc. He has been with Decker since 1991. Burns has been a member of the Friendship Haven Board since 2016, most recently serving as secretary. Burns currently represents Decker on the board of the Greater Fort Dodge Growth Alliance. He has previously served on the boards of Community Foundation and United Way, Unity Point Foundation, and Iowa Central Foundation. He and his wife, Chris, have lived in Fort Dodge for over 20 years. Friendship Haven is a not-for-profit life plan community offering innovative and responsive services to aging adults. Living options on its campus include independent living townhomes and apartments, assisted living, skilled nursing care, adult day services, rehabilitation therapy, and memory support programs. An editorial. CJ Bio America remains committed to community. Mask donation is latest example of its generosity. At a time when wearing masks is increasingly viewed as key to helping stop the spread of coronavirus, many local school students will be appropriately outfitted thanks to the generosity of a company with international reach that has a plant in Webster City. CJ Bio America has donated about 7,000 masks to the Fort Dodge Community School District, St. Edmund Catholic School, Community Christian School, and Manson Northwest Webster Community School District. Many of those masks came from Seoul, South Korea, where the company's parent firm, CJ Cell Jadang Corp., is located. The donation to the schools represents just a portion of the company's recent mask donations. Company leaders estimate that about 30,000 masks have been handed out. CJ Bio America makes amino acids used in livestock feed and liquid fertilizer in a plant west of Fort Dodge in the industrial park known as Iowa's Crossroads of Global Innovation. The company and its employees have proven to be very community-minded since the plant opened in late 2013. Its employees have helped the Lord's Cupboard and Meals on Wheels. They have been very involved in various park and community cleanup efforts. However, the virus that has made the masks necessary has put the brakes on most of those cleanup projects. Recently, the company distributed about $5,000 worth of gift cards to law enforcement, emergency personnel, and frontline workers who have been on the job throughout the pandemic. CJ BioAmerica and its workers have proven to be indispensable on projects ranging from picking up tree branches in parks to providing school children with needed masks. We're grateful that the company opened its first North American plant here in Webster County and continues to be deeply involved in our community. Broadway and Beyond coming to Olson Park, Iowa Central Music Department to perform. The Carl King Bandshell at Olson Park will soon be alive with The Sound of Music, as well as other stage favorites, courtesy of the Iowa Central Community College Music Department. The Broadway and Beyond concert will begin at 6:30 p.m. Thursday. The concert will feature all of the student ensembles at Iowa Central, both vocal and instrumental. It will be the premiere of a new vocal ensemble called the Pop Singers. ICCC Director of Vocal Music Will Lopez said. The concert will be a collection of favorite Broadway tunes from musicals like The Sound of Music, Rent, Hamilton, and more. Scores from movies and TV shows will also be performed, Lopez said. This concert will have something for everyone to enjoy, Lopez said. It is a family-friendly concert. We are inviting families to come, he said. Concertgoers will have the opportunity to experience the concert in two ways. They can come and bring their lawn chairs and spread out so we'll have social distancing, Lopez said. Or they can park in their vehicles near the bandshell and tune in to Iowa Central Student Radio Station 88.1 FM, which will broadcast the concert. It's almost like a drive-in theater experience, but with live music, Lopez said. Due to the COVID-19 pandemic, there will not be any on-site restroom facilities. Lopez said there's a lot of excitement buzzing around the concert. The ensembles have been working really, really hard preparing for it, he said. The concert is free and open to the public. Social distancing and masks will be encouraged but not required. Lopez said this concert will be a perfect performance to start the year with the bands and choirs. We are hoping the weather will be nice. It won't be too cold. It won't be too dark, he said. We hope they can just have fun and spend time with their family. Maybe do a picnic. Programs can help first-time offenders without sending them to court. Kids who get busted for vandalizing property or possessing tobacco are going to be in trouble with the legal system and, often, with their school. But will throwing the book at those youths deter them from a life of crime? Maybe not. Faced with mounting evidence that putting young people charged with nonviolent misdemeanor crimes into the juvenile justice system does more harm than good, city, law enforcement, and school leaders in Fort Dodge have created two diversion programs intended to get youths back on the right path in life without ending up in court. Kirsten Debel, Director of Secondary Education for the Fort Dodge Community School District, said data shows that youth who end up in the juvenile justice system often end up committing more offenses later. The research is actually pretty clear that once a juvenile enters the juvenile justice system, the recidivism rate increases, she said. The school district has set up a program in which students who commit a simple misdemeanor for the first time can be sent to a program conducted by Lutheran Services of Iowa instead of going to court. The program is showing promise. Typically, they don't reoffend, Fort Dodge Police Patrol Officer Bryce Presswood said of students who complete the program. Presswood works as a school resource officer at Fort Dodge Senior High School, and he sees the impact the program has on students. Giving youths the opportunity to complete a diversion program doesn't amount to being soft on crime, according to officials who work with the city and school initiatives. They point out that no one who commits a violent crime or felony is eligible for a diversion program. The school district's diversion program began in the 2018-2019 school year. Presswood said when a youth is facing a simple misdemeanor charge, he explains what could happen to them in the legal system and tells them about the diversion program. He said the students typically jump on board pretty quick when offered a chance to get into that. Kids in that kind of trouble face consequences on two levels, according to Presswood. He said there is a legal consequence which can be resolved through the diversion program. There is also a consequence through the school, such as detention or suspension. Getting into the diversion program doesn't eliminate discipline through the school, so the youth will face detention or suspension. Those who are accepted into diversion are sent to what is called the Friday evening program. It is a 2-hour session conducted by a facilitator from Lutheran Services of Iowa. According to Debel, it consists of a lot of reflection and thinking. The goal is to get the young people to learn how to think and act in ways that will keep them out of trouble. Debel described the program as responding with a teaching moment. I never take my eyes off the end game, which is to produce happy, contributing members of society, she said. I'm not out to get a piece of flesh. I'm out to grow good, strong human beings. The school district provides space for the Friday evening program. However, the program is paid for by the state. Lutheran Services of Iowa has a contract with the state's juvenile court office to conduct the program. You are listening to the reading of the Fort Dodge Messenger for Friday, September 11th and Saturday, September 12th, 2020 on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now, let's turn to today's obituaries. Dale T. Stuckey. Dale T. Stuckey, 68, died Thursday, September 10th at Trinity Regional Medical Center. Private family mass will be at 10:30 a.m. Tuesday, September 15th at Corpus Christi Church. Burial will follow at Corpus Christi Cemetery. Public visitation will be 3 to 8 p.m. Monday at the church. Social distancing and wearing of masks is encouraged. Dale is survived by his best friend and wife of 45 years, Karen, loving children, Samantha Lennon and spouse Lance, Lindsay Ain and spouse Rob, Denny Stuckey and spouse Emily, Mackenzie Ramthan and spouse Aaron, and Leo Stuckey and spouse Kate. Also, his 16 amazing grandchildren, brothers Dave Stuckey and spouse Cindy of Mason City, Dean Stuckey and spouse Denise of Marshalltown, sisters Sue Sherman of Warrensburg, Missouri, and Shirley Thompson and spouse Bruce of Lanesboro. He was preceded in death by his parents, Samuel and Doris Butler Stuckey. Dale T. Stuckey was born August 1, 1952 in Fort Dodge. As a young boy, he and his family moved to Lawrence, and he graduated from Lawrence High School. He then attended Iowa Central Community College. On June 14, 1975, Dale married Karen Crimmins. They made their home in Fort Dodge. For over 40 years, Dale owned and operated Dale's Petroleum. Dale could and would talk to anyone. He had words of encouragement even for strangers. If you were not infected by his smile, a quick joke would get a smirk across your face. The phrase family man was Dale's best description. He was the proudest father and grandfather anyone could find. Work or play, Dale was there, supporting his family and loving every minute of it. He will be tremendously missed by his church, community, friends, and especially his family. Memorials may be left to the discretion of the family. Aline Luco. Service is 11 a.m. Monday, September 14th at St. Paul Lutheran Church in Sac City. Visitation is 3 to 6 p.m. Sunday at Farber and Ottoman Funeral Home in Sac City. Masks are requested. Deanne Knutson. Waukee and formerly of Fort Dodge. Services will be 4 p.m. on Saturday at the Badger Lutheran Church. Burial will take place in the Pioneer Cemetery of rural Badger. Visitation will be 3 p.m. until service time on Saturday. The use of masks are encouraged and social distancing will be followed. The historic Bruce Funeral Home of Fort Dodge is serving the family. Buzzsaw. Number 8 Ankeny, too much for 10th-ranked Dodgers. For the first 2 weeks of the season, the Fort Dodge offense performed like a well-oiled machine, thanks in large part to the dominance of its offensive line. On a misty night at Dodger Stadium Friday, head coach Nick Mosier's squad met its match and then some in the trenches. Eighth-ranked Class 4A Ankeny flipped the script on number 10 FDSH up front, controlling the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball and giving the Dodgers a taste of their own medicine in a 52-18 victory. The Hawks, 2-1 overall, bounced back from a stunning loss at number 6 Waukee the week before in systematic fashion. Fort Dodge, who are now 2-1, hung around for as long as it could, leaning heavily on a defense that showed plenty of grit and fight despite adverse circumstances. But the dam broke in the fourth quarter when Ankeny delivered a 3-touchdown knockout punch to pull away. "That's a really, really good football team," Mosier said of the Hawks. "They were ranked in the top 3 early on for a reason, and they'll be right in the mix when all is said and done. I couldn't be more proud of our defense for keeping us in it. We just couldn't get out of our own way with some mental mistakes, and our offense wasn't where it needed to be. That's a credit to a stout Ankeny defense. It's also on me for not putting us in better position and calling a better game." The Hawks ran 57 plays from scrimmage in the first half alone, building a 21-6 lead heading into the intermission. Ankeny didn't do anything fancy in the subpar weather, leaning heavily on the legs of sophomore tailback Reed Johnson and senior quarterback Jace Bauer. The duo combined for 39 carries, 189 yards, and all 3 scores before the break. Even so, the Dodgers hung tough. They didn't allow a single play over 19 yards during that stretch, stopped the Hawks twice on downs in FDSH territory, and senior cornerback Jerry Chadha intercepted a pass in the end zone to thwart another scoring attempt. Fort Dodge had a few flashes of brilliance offensively, but for the most part struggled to find any consistency in a ground game that previously bowled over Ames and Sioux City East to start the year. As expected, Ankeny crowded the line and ostensibly went all in on stopping star Dodger tailback Dason Clayton. The strategy worked as Clayton rushed for a quiet 74 yards on 22 carries. Clayton did throw the first touchdown pass of his career out of the Wildcat formation, a 76-yarder to classmate Tyler Schreier to immediately answer the Hawks' methodical opening drive in the first quarter. But Fort Dodge went silent on its next 8 possessions before junior quarterback Carson Peterson found Schreier on a 61-yard scoring strike in the final minute of the third period. Schreier finished with 5 catches for a career-high 169 yards. Field position played a pivotal role in the cadence of the contest as well. Ankeny started in Dodger territory 5 different times, and all 11 drives began no deeper than its own 30-yard line. Fort Dodge, meanwhile, had 8 of its 13 possessions begin from its own 20-yard line on back. 5 Hawk kickoffs were touchbacks, neutralizing talented FDSH returners Schreier and Sam Daniel. The Dodgers also struggled in the punting game, with 6 attempts going for only a 23.5-yard average. "They really dominated us on special teams and with field position," Mosier said. "We have a lot of improving still to do overall. We knew that coming in. Ankeny is obviously better than us at this point, and we caught them at a bad time coming off a loss. But I'm not going to fault our effort at all. We have some things to clean up, but we fought and did some positive things. They're as good up front as maybe anyone will see the rest of the way. The Dodgers still have number 1 Dowling and 4th-ranked Urbandale to come, and their defense is just absolutely flies to the ball." Senior Dylan Zimmerman and junior Ben Egli had the first 2 sacks of the year for the Fort Dodge defense. Sophomore quarterback Connor Carver connected with his classmate, receiver Javian Jondal, on a 15-yard touchdown pass for the first scoring strike of the duo's career. Junior John Presswood rushed for 42 yards on only 9 carries. Fort Dodge will now head to Marshalltown this coming Friday and take on the Bobcats, who are 1-2. The Dodgers were originally scheduled to face Des Moines North at home, but the Polar Bears are currently sidelined by online schooling. Because Marshalltown also lost an opponent, another DMPS member in Des Moines East, FDSH and the Bobcats will resume their rivalry, which had been off the table for this year. Area Football Roundup. Crews, Jaguars, Crews. It was a happy homecoming for Southeast Valley in Gowrie Friday night as the Jaguars remained unbeaten with a convincing 36-20 victory over Belmont Clemmy. Colson Crews had 3 passing touchdowns for the Jaguars, including 2 to Caleb Scott. Scott also returned a kickoff back for a score, and Laith Munch punched in his 5th rushing touchdown of the year. Crews hit Colton Brandt for the first points of the game before back-to-back touchdown completions to Scott. Crews now has 5 passing touchdowns and 2 rushing scores this season. Scott came into the game with just 2 catches on the year, but found himself the favorite target on this night. His 77-yard kickoff return gave Southeast Valley a 28-13 lead after Cruz ran in the conversion. Cruz threw for 159 yards, Scott had 71 yards receiving, and Munch ran for 56 as Southeast Valley finished with 346 yards total. The Jaguars have outscored their three opponents 122-42. After the Broncos cut it to 28-20, Munch hit pay dirt on a 2-yard run. Scott added the conversion. There was a scary moment late in the game when a Belmont Clemmie player was injured and had to be transported by ambulance from the field. Southeast Valley heads to Eagle Grove next Friday before a key district showdown with No. 2 Class 1A South Central Calhoun on Friday, September 25th in Lake City. Matson leads Wildcats again. Caden Matson accounted for 4 more touchdowns as the Humboldt football team downed Boone here in Boone Friday night 36-0. Matson completed 7 of 12 passes for 88 yards with a score, adding 162 yards rushing and 3 touchdowns on just 8 carries. A junior, Matson now has 5 passing touchdowns and 7 rushing scores on the season. Gabe Goodell caught 3 passes for 49 yards, ran for 40 yards, and had a touchdown for the Wildcats. Goodell, a senior, has 5 touchdowns on the year. On defense, Tanner McKimney had 10 tackles, and Matson picked off a pass as the Wildcats made it 2 in a row over Boone. They have won 5 of the last 6 meetings overall. Humboldt returns home next Friday to face North Central Conference rival and 8th-ranked Class 3A Webster City. Lynx pull out 8-7 victory. The 8th-ranked Class 3A Webster City football team found a way to remain perfect Friday night in Webster City thanks to Chase Rattenborg. Rattenborg scored with just over 3 minutes left to make it 7-6 in favor of Ballard before going in for the 2-point conversion. On the game-winning drive, Rattenborg accounted for 66 yards rushing and passing. Webster City, 3-0 overall, 1-0 in district, put together a 12-play, 81-yard drive that spanned over 5 minutes. Rattenborg finished with 88 yards rushing and was 4-for-4 passing for 44 yards. He had a key fourth-down completion to Tyler Olson on the final drive. Olson picked off a pass to end Ballard's last attempt to take the lead. Trey Mathis ran for 122 yards, and Olson had 2 catches. The Lynx held the Bombers to 128 yards and 5 first downs, with 69 of those yards coming in the first quarter. Webster City has won 5 in a row over Ballard. Number 6 Mustangs blank Wolverines. The 6th-ranked 8-man Newell Fonda football team had no trouble on Friday night in Newell, posting a convincing 55-0 victory over West Bend Mallard. Senior Gabe Sievers accounted for 3 touchdowns on offense, hitting Jake DeMay for a pair of TD strikes from 39 and 26 yards out. Sievers also ran in another score from 45 yards out. Trey Jungers added a pair of touchdowns, including an interception return for the Mustangs, who are 3-0 overall. Sievers had scored 6 times this season in 3 games. Hunter Christensen had 11 tackles and picked off a pass for Newell Fonda. The Mustangs are averaging just over 50 points per game and have won each of the last 5 meetings between the two teams. They are 8-2 in the last 10 games. Strong first half carries number 2 SCC. Brennan Holder and Blake McAllister each scored twice as part of a 6-touchdown first half for 2nd-ranked Class 1A South Central Calhoun as the Titans crushed Clarion Goldfield Dawes Friday night in Lake City 49-13. Holder scored from 65 yards out on the first place from scrimmage, adding another TD to give South Central Calhoun, who are 3-0 overall, 1-0 in the district, complete control early on. McAllister converted a short touchdown run following a blocked punt by the Titan defense, adding a 53-yard scoring burst to make it 41-0 before halftime. Cole Corey hit Blake Thompson on a passing score and ran in the 2-point conversion attempt as well. Jordan Kamanyavong and Aiden Toms each scored rushing touchdowns in the game. Holder ran 9 times for 110 yards and McAllister 5 for 100 as the Titans racked up 301 yards on the ground. McAllister also had 2 tackles for loss and Thompson recovered a fumble. Clarion Goldfield Dows, who are 0-3 overall, 0-1 in the district, finally got on the board late in the third, scoring just its second touchdown of the season. This was the first meeting between the two since 2013, when South Central Calhoun won 28-19. The Cowboys won the year before, 17-14. Number 7 Ehawks, Silence Hinton. For the second time in three games, Emmitsburg pitched a shutout. The 7th-ranked Class 1A Ehawks earned a 41-0 victory over Hinton in Emmitsburg Friday night, earning their third consecutive shutout in the series. Cole Shirk ran for 116 yards and 2 touchdowns on 18 carries, with Lane Otten adding 66 yards and a score. Shirk has 436 yards and 5 touchdowns on the year. Grant Kibbe, Colby Weir, and Ryerson Bevers also had rushing touchdowns. Weir added 56 yards and Kibbe 50 as part of a 53-carry, 345-yard night on the ground for Emmitsburg. Lex Castle had an interception, and Cade Jacobson was 5-for-6 on extra point attempts. The Ehawks also earned a 35-0 shutout in Week 1 over Bishop Garrigan. They have outscored their three opponents 110-27. Indians score 63 in victory. The Pocahontas area football team made a statement in Eagle Grove Friday night, improving to 3-0 with the 63-14 victory over Eagle Grove. The Indians have now scored 139 points in three games this season and own 5 consecutive wins over the Eagles. During that streak versus Eagle Grove, Pocahontas area has posted 212 points and allowed just 22. More fireworks. Gales pull away from North Union, improve to 3-0. Through three games, the St. Edmund football team sits exactly where Matt Dillon had hoped they would be. Drew Schaefer followed up his record-setting performance last Friday with over 250 yards of total offense and 4 touchdowns. Tyler Rosemanoth had his second career 100-yard rushing game, and Casey Baker continued to find ways to score as the Gales claimed a 53-27 victory over North Union here Friday night. With the win, St. Edmund improved to 3-0 on the year ahead of a key showdown with defending state champion and 10th-ranked Class A West Hancock in Britt next week. For now, though, Dillon and the Gales will enjoy what they have accomplished. Schaefer, who threw for a school record 342 yards a week ago, completed 14 of 22 passes for 217 yards, including a 49-yard touchdown strike to Parker Oswald to help seal the victory. The senior also ran for 50 yards and 2 more scores. "It's just so much fun watching what Drew can do out there on the field," Dillon said. "I honestly don't know if I have ever coached a quarterback who has had a 3-game stretch to start a season like this one." Schaefer has thrown for over 750 yards with 7 touchdowns and no interceptions. He connected with Oswald on a pair of key third-down completions in the fourth, while also being inserted in on defense to help contain the rushing attack of Ryan Lang. Lang, North Union's senior workhorse, ran for 250 yards and scored all 4 touchdowns. He also had a long touchdown run called back that would have put him over 300 yards on the night. "Going to have nightmares of Ryan Lang, that's for sure," Dillon said. "I pulled him over after the game and told him how impressed I am with him as a football player. He is a tremendous talent, and that is a very good football team at North Union." The Warriors struck first as Lang found the end zone 4 minutes into the contest. Rosemanoth caught his first career touchdown pass from Schaefer later in the quarter to tie it up. It was Lang again to make it 14-7 with a 5-yard run in the second, but the Gales answered right back with Schaefer taking it in himself. This was the first time St. Edmund trailed on the year. "We had to battle some adversity there early on," Dillon said. "We needed to make a change on defense, and we put Drew out there and moved Sean Flattery in at linebacker. It helped at least slow them down some." Much of the second half was dominated by the Gales as they scored 6 touchdowns, including an interception returned by Baker. The senior ran for 100 yards as they amassed over 300 on the ground. Oswald caught 6 passes for 142 yards, and junior Quinton McCarville had 6 receptions for 61 yards. "We're really doing a lot of good things out there on the field," Dillon said, "but it's all about to get taken up a level with West Hancock." Along with Baker's interception, Sean Flattery also picked off a pass as St. Edmund was +4 in the turnover department. West Hancock, who are 1-1, take on Bishop Garrigan and Britt Friday night before welcoming the Gales next week. The Eagles went 13-0 last season, winning the state title over Grundy Center. Prior to kickoff, St. Edmund honored its 11 senior football players, doing the same for cross-country and cheerleading during halftime. Senior night for Dodger volleyball. In her first season as Fort Dodge head coach, Martha Miracle isn't looking for an immediate turnaround. She knows it's going to be a process, and every step forward is a building block. On Thursday night, the Dodgers, who are 1-8 overall, gave a glimpse of what it could be despite losing in three games to Johnston, who are 2-2. The Dragons defeated the Dodgers by scores of 25-14, 25-17, and 25-23. "We are right there," Miracle said. "We just have to build on the little things and know that we can improve. We have to take baby steps and get better each time out. We have to keep building on the steps that we take forward." In the final set, the Dodgers moved in the right direction, nearly extending the match after trailing 5-0 from the start. The Dragons built an early 10-5 edge. The Dodgers answered with an 11-3 run to cut the deficit to 13-12. Johnston went back up 23-21, led before the Dodgers scored the next 2 points to tie the contest at 23-all. The Dragons tallied the final 2 points for the sweep. "I was proud of the way that we were able to keep fighting," Miracle said. "But you can't start a match down 5-0. The good thing is we made a few mistakes that we can correct. We are still learning to play together. We have to take steps forward as a team." In Game 1, the Dodgers got off to a quick start with a 5-2 lead before the Dragons went on a 14-4 run to put the game out of reach. The teams went toe-to-toe in the second set as the Dodgers started with a 10-8 run before Johnston closed with a 12-2 rally, eventually going on for the victory. Junior Alexis Horacheta led FDSH at the service line, going 9-for-11. Senior Kiana Tooney was the kills leader with 10. Juniors Jaden Pettit-Johnston and Brooke Hansen had 3 kills each. Senior Olivia Bell had 12 assists, and sophomore Maggie Elsbecker had 3. Junior Tori Bennett had 15 digs, and Tooney recorded 8. Hirachetta and senior Cheyenne Miller-Hamid had 7 digs each. Seniors Bell, Miller-Hamid, Hansen, Tooney, Daisha McDonald, Chloe Wirtz, Alexis Bass, and J.C. Daniel were honored for their time on the court as Dodgers. "It's crazy to have a group of 8 seniors," Miracle said. "It was great to be able to honor them. This is their final time as Dodgers, so they are ready to take charge and keep getting better as a team." The Dodgers are back in action on Tuesday when they travel to face Ankeny Centennial. Action is slated to begin at 7:30 p.m. Dodgers seniors shine. On a night set aside for their 5 seniors, the Fort Dodge girls swim team came up with 5 victories. Senior Grace Hartley, who has recorded a number of fast times in the Dodger pool, came away as an individual double winner and was part of a winning relay with St. Edmund senior Riley Steinkamp. The Dodgers lost a close 85-77 victory to Carroll, but knocked off Algona 116-46. "We didn't win, which was a little frustrating, but it was great to be able to honor our seniors," said FDSH head coach Ashley Beaumont. "At the same time, we did see some good competition, which pushes us to go harder." Sophomore Eileen Fierke was also a double winner for the Dodgers. Hartley earned gold in the 200 individual medley with a time of 2 minutes 18.74 seconds, more than 3 seconds faster than Malia Axman of Carroll. The Dodger senior also captured first by more than 30 seconds in the 500 freestyle in a time of 5 minutes 38.85 seconds. Hartley, Fierke, Steinkamp, and freshman Reagan Woolridge won the 200 medley relay in 2 minutes, 0.46 seconds, 7 seconds faster than Carroll. Fierke was the 200 freestyle champ in 2 minutes, 0.58 seconds, and also won the 100 backstroke in 1 minute, 5.07 seconds. "It was nice to see Grace and Riley earn double wins," Beaumont said. "We had some girls like Reagan and McKenna Kammerer step up." Steinkamp added 2 silver medals to her relay gold. She finished behind Jenna Currier of Carroll in the 50 freestyle in a time of 26.88. She was also second in the 100 butterfly with 1 minute 7.95 seconds. Woolridge was behind Hartley in the 500 freestyle with a time of 6 minutes 9.52 seconds. The 200 freestyle relay team of Fierke, Steinkamp, Claire, Kinzel, and Hartley finished second in 1 minute 48.37 seconds. The Dodgers paid tribute to Hartley, Steinkamp, Tristan Doster, Kinsel, and Maddie Major. "It was awesome to honor our seniors," Beaumont said. "It's great to be able to recognize them. With this season, you never know what is going to happen. We wanted to honor them early and say thank you to them. I've coached a couple of these girls since I have been here. This was emotional." The Dodgers are back in action on Tuesday when they travel to Ankeny. Action begins at 5:30 p.m. And that does it for today's reading of the Fort Dodge Messenger for Friday, September 11th, and Saturday, September 12th, 2020. I'm your reader, Leanne Bakerose. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. Thanks for listening.